The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, this is Chris from Amateur Traveler. This is going to be an encore episode today because I've been traveling and didn't have time to put out an episode. I do try and take about 4 weeks off a year, and this is one of them. But I think you'll enjoy this episode on Bosnia and Herzegovina. Amateur Traveler, episode 711. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about bridges and bazaars, waterfalls and hikes, Cevapcici, and an unfortunate archduke, as we go to the country of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Bosnia. I'd like to welcome to the show Kenan Chatovic, who is coming to us from Bosnia, and is coming to us from HighlanderAdventures.ba, and has come to talk to us about Bosnia-Herzegovina. Kenan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Excellent. And for people who can't find Bosnia and Herzegovina on a map, where are we talking about?
Well, everyone knows how to find Italy. It's a big... shoe-shaped country,
yep.
Well, boot-shaped country. So just go to the right side across the Adriatic Sea, and we're right there.
Well, and your neighbor of Croatia has gotten a lot more
Croatia
press
kinda
recently.
Croatia kind of eats Bosnia. You know, it goes around like a little crescent moon on the north, on the west, and the south. And then on the east, we have Serbia and southeast Montenegro.
Well, and I want to address your... interested in making sure that people understand that if they remember news about Bosnia, they may be remembering news from 20, 30 years ago when Bosnia was going through a war. That's done, and that's been done now for quite a long time. There are people who are out in the working world who don't remember that, and it's a wonderful place to go. I want to say that I was anxious to do this show because we haven't done a show on Bosnia for a long time. And since then, I have been to the country and loved it. So why should someone go to Bosnia and Herzegovina?
Well, there is a lot of reasons, depending what you're interested in. Now, Bosnia is a very complex country, but extremely small. It's the size of Pennsylvania, but inside you have so much. For the adventure seekers, there are so many adventure opportunities, from whitewater rafting to canyoning to paragliding. Hiking is spectacular. And then if you're into history, we say that we have much more history than we can handle. Different empires were here. We like to say we're on the crossroads, or that we're the meeting point between the East and the West. Mm-hmm. Culturally, very complex country. And also religiously. We have Muslims, we have Orthodox Christians, and we have Catholics, with three big groups. Of course, there's a Jewish community here, which has been here since they were thrown out of Spain after Reconquista, so for 500 years. All of these make this crazy, crazy and beautiful mix that's very interesting for foreigners to see. Because in Sarajevo, for example, and in many other cities in Bosnia, you can find a mosque, Orthodox church, Catholic church, and a synagogue literally in 200-meter radius. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been like that for 500 years, well, in Sarajevo, because that's how old the city is, and all over Bosnia, and we're very proud of that. Architecturally, it's very different from anything else you can find in Europe. You're going to find this mix of Central European styles as well as the Ottoman styles and a lot of course, local Bosnian styles. And all of that mixed together, we like to say that we are a Bosnian pot. That's one dish that we have. It's cooked in a big clay pot with a lot of things mixed inside. And that's Bosnia. A lot of things mixed, and it works perfectly. And in the end, taste is fantastic. Why you should visit Bosnia? Well, whatever you choose, you're going to love it. If you're into history, there's too much of it. If you're into nature, it's absolutely stunning. It's fantastic. Imagine Pennsylvania and then put inside the Rockies, Grand Canyon, Inca Trail, and a lot of other things as well. A bit of New Zealand as well. We just lack seaside. We have 24 kilometers of seaside, so that's one thing we don't have. And then, of course, for actually learning history or getting certain messages, let's say, about life, about history, how people live together or how they don't like each other, because, well, we had a lot of wars, let's say, especially in the last 200 years. There's a lot of lessons that you can learn in Bosnia. Let's say war tourism, dark tourism is now a very big part of tourism in Bosnia. So if you want to learn about that, we are definitely a place to come to see what happens if you don't defeat fascism, like most of Europe defeated it after the Second World War. And it actually shows how life can be, both good and the bad. Also, if you want to visit a place which is completely different than the rest of the Europe and very relaxed, very laid back, with fantastic food. Well, that's a lot of reasons, I think.
And it's really inexpensive compared to some of its neighbors.
Yes.
we should put that in too.
It is very cheap. So you can do a lot for quite small amount of money here.
I think when we were in, and I'm going to say Sarajevo, which is the way that people are used to hearing it pronounced in English. You say it slightly differently than me. When we were in there, we could eat for five people at an ethnic restaurant, you know, the Bosnian restaurant, there for what one person was eating at when we drove over to Dubrovnik. So
yes. Yes, and now Dubrovnik is even more expensive.
Yeah, I can believe that. Well, so two things. One is I'm pronouncing Sarajevo wrong, and I'm probably going to keep doing that because I can't pronounce it correctly. And then two is you're giving me permission not to say every time Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is the official name, but I could just say Bosnia. Good.
Would you like me to explain that?
Please do, yes.
So too much history, more history than we can handle. Bosnia and Herzegovina as a name, the whole name, is actually a historical mistake.
What?
Yes. So the country was always named Bosnia. So in the Middle Ages, it was Duchy of Bosnia. Then it became Kingdom. It was Kingdom of Bosnia. During the Ottoman times, it was Vilayet of Bosnia. It was always Bosnia. But in the 1830s, Austro-Hungarian army, well, Austro-Hungary was already getting ready to conquer Bosnia because, well, you know, they had a lot of heat between them and the Ottoman Empire, and Austro-Hungarian Empire wanted to spread down in the Balkans. And when they made maps, there was a rebellion in Bosnia in 1830s where we weren't happy with the Ottoman politics and so on, so we just wanted more autonomy and so on. Bosnian army was winning. We defeated Ottoman army a few times. And then the last battle happened just outside of Sarajevo. Bosnian army was betrayed by two guys from Herzegovina. So Herzegovina was just a region inside Bosnia. And because they sided with the Ottomans, Ottomans won the battle. And as a reward to those two guys, they took Herzegovina out of Bosnia, out of Bosnian administrative unit. So in order for them to have higher level in the government.
Sure.
And this lasted only for like, I think, two decades, something like that. And right after, it was reincorporated into Bosnia. But when Austro-Hungarians made the maps, they wrote Bosnia and Herzegovina separately because it was during that time. So in 1878, when Austro-Hungary finally conquered Bosnia, they changed the name. They had it on the maps and they said Bosnia and Herzegovina. And it stayed up till this day.
Huh. Yeah? I did not know that.
It is crazy, but whenever we go somewhere, whenever we introduce ourselves, we're always going to say we're Bosnian or we're from Bosnia. Never, I would say Bosnia and Herzegovina, unless someone like doesn't understand what Bosnia is. But when we talk about where exactly from Bosnia, then you say from Herzegovina, or from here or from there. And I'm very comfortable saying this because, for example, my mom is from Herzegovina. So, you know.
Good to know. Excellent. So what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us if we have a week to 2 weeks in Bosnia?
So I would make a combination of history, culture, and adventure.
Okay.
Because that way I think we get most out of Bosnia. So if you only have a week, and it's definitely not enough, let's say we start from Sarajevo. It's easiest place to fly in. I would spend first 2 days in Sarajevo. Sarajevo can stay a base. You can do day trips. One day, you could go to Srebrenica to visit the genocide memorial over there. and it's a whole day trip, very emotional. After that, we can go to central Bosnia to visit the medieval capital of Bosnian Kingdom, Jajce and Travnik, two fantastic towns with crazy architectural mix, very beautiful. And after that, day five, we could move to the mountains. There are a couple of very easy, very beautiful hikes. For example, hiking to Lukomir Highland Village. I can talk later a little bit more about that.
Okay.
From there, we could just go down the mountain, do whitewater rafting for one day on Neretva River. Fantastic. And then continue further south down to Mostar and little towns surrounding Mostar. So Počitelj, which is one fantastic, beautiful village in natural amphitheater in a cliff. And it's been preserved like that. There's not a single new house. So the youngest house is 300 years old. So kind of like USA. After that, Blagaj, there is a fantastic little teke. It's kind of like Muslim monastery, even though there are no monasteries in Islam. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the oldest in the country, and it's situated under this amazing, very tall cliff right next to the biggest water source in Europe. So the whole complex is just extraordinary. It's quite small, but it's one of the highlights of everyone's trips. Of course, if you're a little bit more religious, very close to Mostar, especially for the Catholics, there's Medjugorje, a small little town where there's been a sighting of Virgin Mary. So it's very popular. It's actually the most popular tourist destination in Bosnia because of a lot of pilgrims who go there.
Really?
And just south of that, there is Kravice Waterfalls, which in the last episode that you recorded about Bosnia was this place out of the beaten path where, you know, you can be all alone in the wilderness with this amazing waterfall, which looks just like in the jungle, like South America or something. Now is overcrowded with tourists, to be honest.
Well, that's why we needed to update this.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, that was probably our fault. But
yeah, I remember the times when it wasn't touristy and we would go there all the time. We loved it so much, swimming freely, jumping from the rocks, swimming under waterfalls. Right now, it's not as fun.
Well, and we should, well, actually, right now, since we're recording this in the middle of a pandemic, it probably is not as crowded, but you probably also can't go there. So
I definitely will.
That begs the question of, are there better times of year for us to come to Bosnia? When would you recommend we come there?
Well, depends what you want to do. Uh-huh. Two most popular times are definitely spring. Well, it's outside of the big crowds, but it's very beautiful. You still have amazing weather. It's quite warm. It's not crazy hot. You see everything that you need to see. And I would definitely recommend spring. Also, in September can be fantastic, especially for the hiking. Late September, when you get the colors of the trees changing, it is just outstanding. And still, weather is very nice. You can have, you know, a shower for a day or something like that, but it's not that bad. It's actually very good. During summer, which obviously you get most people, you have big festivals happening, let's say like Sarajevo Film Festival and so on. And if I would go somewhere, I would not prefer summer. It's fun, but it's better in the spring or September.
Okay, excellent. So you started us in Sarajevo. What are we going to do when we're there?
Sarajevo is, I can't say the most popular. When people come to Bosnia, they usually think about Mostar and the old bridge and that. It's like unique bridge,
sure.
And
mm-hmm.
everyone loves it. But whenever they come to Sarajevo, they think it's going to be, you know, less pretty than Mostar. And in some certain sense it is. But Sarajevo is very beautiful, very interesting town. So the most important thing in Sarajevo is to explore it, to walk around. It's quite small, and just walking around the old town takes you through centuries of different architecture, different cultures, and so on. So let's start just by walking around the city to see the most important sites in the old town. So you do that by walking a few hours around. You can see the mosques, you can see the synagogues, you can see the Orthodox and Catholic churches. And of course, relax. Do everything slowly. It's very important in Bosnia. If you want to experience it, if you're rushing, you're not going to see it. You have to relax. You have to slow down. Take your time. So while you're walking around the old town, go and eat something. You know, just stop halfway, go eat something. There's restaurants everywhere, literally. So when you feel hungry, you go eat. After that, you go and sit for a coffee, Bosnian coffee. Very important. I can explain more about Bosnian coffee, how to make it, how to prepare it, and never, ever call it Turkish coffee. That's very offensive.
Is it similar to Turkish coffee?
Very.
Okay.
It is very similar, but the way we prepare it and the way we serve it is very different than Turkish coffee. So we're very jealous of it and we were very proud of it. So walking around the old town, just walking around Başçarşıya or walking down Ferhadiye Street, will take you through centuries. So there's literally one line separating Sarajevo into Ottoman and Austro-Hungarian parts. So literally, if you look towards east, you see this Ottoman town. You feel like you're in Bursa or somewhere in central Turkey. And then you just turn around, you're standing on the same spot, and you look down the street and you feel like you're in Vienna. There's a little line and it's very, very cute. It says, Sarajevo meeting of cultures. And what I like to do when I stand there, for example, with a group, turn around and it's literally east and west, like the street that goes from east to west. And so in the eastern part, it's Ottoman part. There's more mosques. If you go there, you eat cevap, for example, something that came out of kebab, but it's very, very Bosnian dish, the most important one. If you go to the western side, you go and eat Viennese schnitzel. If you look to the east, you're going to go and drink Bosnian coffee. If you look to the west, you're going to go there and drink espresso. If you look to the east, you're going to eat baklava, hurmašca, tulumba, tufahia. If you look to the west, you're going to eat zahir torte or, you know, something very Western.
Well, and if I'm in the right spot, I'm thinking you're standing by the main mosque looking towards the big Catholic church. Am I in the right spot?
No.
Okay.
It is. So the big mosque, it's just like 100 meters down towards the cathedral.
Yes.
Yeah, the spot is like between cathedral and the main mosque.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's what
but
I was saying.
But you can't see either one of them from
the
spot.
Oh, you can't see either one. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, can't see them. Yes, so after walking around, after having cevapi or pita or Bosnian coffee, I would definitely recommend walking to the one of the viewpoints above the city. So Sarajevo is very interesting geographically. It's completely surrounded by mountains. Mm-hmm. And a lot of neighborhoods are actually on the foothills of the mountain, right? It's
right.
Going uphill. And offers a lot of viewpoints. And one of the most popular for locals is Žuta Tabia, the Yellow Bastion, which is just 10 minutes walk from the Başçarşıya Square and offers fantastic view. It's one thing that made me stay in Sarajevo. So when I was thinking about leaving to study or staying in the city, actually, that was the view that decided that I'm going to stay, that I can't leave the city. You go there, you take one pizza. It's not very Bosnian, but Bosnian style pizza with a lot of Bosnian ingredients from one bakery just on the way. You go up there, you sit, you look at the city. This is very Sarajevan thing to do. And everyone who comes here, I always tell them, do that. After that, you can go further up to the White Bastion, even better view. And if you didn't have enough of the views, you go even further up from there to a place called Zmajevac. Translated, it means a dragon's nest. There's a nice little cafe there. You can have your hookah, you can have a tea and just watch the sunset from there. It's absolutely stunning. And I would recommend spending first day in Sarajevo like that, meeting the city.
Well, and there's a couple of things that I would say. We took a walking tour when we were there, and this is definitely, it's something that I like to do in general, but it's definitely something I would recommend in Sarajevo because as a history buff, there is so much history there that I would have walked right past or walked right over. And so I'm thinking of the fact that, you know, this is where World War One starts. So, you know, you can go to the spot and there's a plaque that marks where the Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated. But if you're there with a tour guide who can tell you more about, you know, what happened then and, you know, what that was all about, you know, that's going to be a little more interesting.
Definitely.
Or I think of the fact that we were walking over the Sarajevo roses and didn't know what they were. But what has happened is from the Bosnian War, when Bosnia, when Sarajevo was besieged for, 400 days or something like that? I'm trying to remember what the...
1,425.
1,425. Wow, and I know that exactly. So this is a very significant time period in Sarajevo, obviously, when they were being besieged by the, predominantly by the Serbians. Then they were shelling the city, and what they've done is they've left some of the places where the shells hit, and they've just colored them in with red, and they're called the Sarajevo Roses, and they have preserved this sad memory of what happened during this time, but it's also a memory of when the Serbians thought it would fall in just a matter of days, and the fact that it didn't.
Yes.
The fact that it, you know, continued to survive is also a proud moment for the people from here. And then we also then visited the Sarajevo tunnel. And one of the reasons it didn't fall is there was a tunnel built under the airport where the UN had kept the airport under their control to get relief supplies in. There was a tunnel that was built to supply the city. And the original tunnel, I think, is gone, but you can go to a recreation of it and learn more about that period in history. So I thought
it was
a fascinating place to go, but also one of the reasons why I do recommend a tour in Sarajevo is all of that.
Yes.
We're not talking about a very large area that you're walking through. When you talk about walking from the European side, Austrian side to the Muslim side or to the Turkish, Ottoman Turkish side, that's two blocks, three blocks?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, very small central core of the city in that old part of town, and yet so much history here that I really did enjoy doing a walking tour and getting an idea of that.
As a tourist guide, I'm also a history buff, and wherever I travel, I always like to do the walking tours. It's something to me, the city. But I've never seen a place where it's so important to do a walking tour.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you literally walk over the history. You're going to miss something. And by doing the tours, you get a lot of personal details. Bosnians are just like that. We are very honest, very open. We're always going to tell you straight to your face what we think. And we like to share. We like to be friendly. Having a tour like that, with a lot of things that we feel very personally connected to, it is very important. And it really changes your perspective. Just walking around the city and seeing these buildings, there are even, you know, little plates which say, you know, when certain building was built, why it is important,
sure,
and so on. But without a guide explaining you the stories, how there is only one single library which preserved every single book during the war, and
right,
how they saved this one book that they thought was lost, you know, how Archduke was killed. Just going to the place and seeing the place where he was assassinated is not enough. The actual story, how it happened, the mistake that the driver made,
right,
is just ridiculous. And just changes the experience when you actually hear this kind of details in Sarajevo. And especially for understanding the last war and understanding the siege of Sarajevo, you have to have a guide. It doesn't have to be me. It can be anyone from the city. Most of the guys do a fantastic, fantastic job with that. And I would definitely recommend doing a walking tour of the city and Siege of Sarajevo tour. So Siege of Sarajevo tour, you would start from the old town. And depending who does it, there are certain places which you visit.
Right.
But every single one of them is going to include a sniper alley. It's going to include
right,
the tunnel under the airport, which is still the original tunnel, just that the whole tunnel is not, we can't use it because the airport and the government are concerned about the safety of the airport.
Okay.
So the Memorial Fund is trying to open the whole tunnel so you can walk all 800 meters of the tunnel, but
oh my gosh,
you know, we'll see when it happens. It still didn't happen. So we have the, you know, the first 30 meters are open for public. The rest is closed for public still.
Well, and I would caution anybody who is my height.
it is one and a half meter tall on average. Yes, definitely claustrophobic.
Excellent.
But, definitely important to take the tour.
Well,
it can be a free walking tour or whatever, but definitely do it.
I agree completely. And then I do want to get back to the food. So you had recommended the traditional dish, which is meat, bread, and raw onions. Basically,
yes.
And honestly, you ought to cook the onions. Is my personal. What I would recommend is pita.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just ate that.
Okay. That we love that. And that's, so that's phyllo dough that's baked and can be filled with spinach and cheese and potatoes or beef or onions and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. Delicious, inexpensive, traditional, really good. I've got a blog post that I will put in that recommends a particular place that we went to, but it's, you can find it all over the place.
Exactly.
Anything else that you would recommend? That you mentioned the Bosnian coffee, you mentioned the two traditional dishes that we ought to eat before we move on from Sarajevo.
Yes. So we say that you haven't been in Sarajevo if you don't eat cevapčići and pita.
Okay.
That's it. You didn't try it. You've been here for a month. You didn't
Good.
Try it.
I've been
count.
To Sarajevo.
So obviously the most famous Bosnian dish is cevapčići.
Yep.
It's originally very Sarajevan thing. I can show you the exact spot where first one was made. It has its own versions all around Bosnia. So three most popular ones, obviously Sarajevan cevap, Banja Luka cevap, and Travnik cevap. And we don't eat them anywhere else, not even in Mostar. So not even inside Bosnia. I mean, you can eat them, but if it's not perfect, perfect, then it's just not good enough. For someone who doesn't know, he's going to love it wherever. But for Bosnian acquired taste, it just has to be pure perfection. So some of us even joke that we love this stuff so much that we want to put it on our national flag.
Excellent. And then I would also recommend in the old town, there are some wonderful handicrafts, especially some wonderful tinkerers and metal craft that I think is worth seeing, all again in this historic center. Anything else we need to do in Sarajevo? Otherwise, we do need to move along.
I just want to say one more thing about the food and then I'll try to be faster, all right?
Okay.
Obviously, cevapi are the most popular and pita right after that, two most important dishes. Pita, you can eat it everywhere, but the best one you can find is in the mountain villages. So if you do this hike to Lukomir, you're going to eat amazing pita up there in the village. So prepared right from the local cheese, everything is perfectly local and homemade. But after that, there are so many things to try in Bosnia because exactly of these influences from all over the place that we've had during all of these centuries. We have a very nice mix of continental European food as well as Oriental food, Turkish, Arabic, even Persian. So you can try a lot of different things and a lot of great things. So just a few things that I would recommend. Bosnian pot, bosanski lonac, stuffed vegetables like sogan dolma, japrak, stuffed peppers and so on. So if you just walk around the old town in Sarajevo or in Mostar or wherever else in the country, find places that are called ašćinica. These are specialized in these kinds of cooked foods. And it's usually not going to be very touristy, but it's going to be the best food you eat. So for cevapi, we have special restaurants which just sell grilled meat. For pita, we have burekđince, which are specialized only for pita. And then for everything else, the best part, there's ašćinica. And you never eat cevapi or pita in ašćinica. So it's, in Bosnia, we have a lot of rules, And one rule to remember is if you go to a restaurant, after you finish eating, you don't sit for a coffee. You don't stay in the restaurant. You get up, you go to a coffee shop, which serves much better coffee, and you drink coffee there. Staying in a restaurant after you finish your food is very weird in Bosnia.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting because it's very European, but not very Bosnian. Okay. Excellent. You took us then to the genocide memorial, as I recall.
Yes. Srebrenica is a town where single worst act of genocide happened during the last war. And there is a big memorial complex. It's situated inside of a UN base. It is very emotional to go there. And if you really want to see what happened in Bosnia during the war, you should go there. You know, usually people think about going on vacation and, you know, only feeling happy, drinking beer or watching something beautiful, sitting on a beach or whatever. But even though it's sad, it actually, I think it's very useful for everybody. Through the years, it turns out to be the best thing, you know. Facing that and then coming back and seeing that actually, when you come back to Sarajevo and Mostar and Travnik, you see that actually life goes on and that everything is beautiful. Why is Srebrenica important is because after the Second World War, Europe said never again. And it happened. Inside of Europe, on UN watch, it happened. in the time of satellite TV, and it was all broadcasted pretty much live. And this is the shocking part, that we allowed, we as world community, we allowed this to happen. It is definitely a place to go and to see and to learn that people should be grateful just if they have peace, if they can have their own normal lives. It's something that especially people in the West are forgetting. So if you go there, there's obviously what you have to see is the cemetery itself. Just the line of white tombstones looks like one seat just covers this valley. And just seeing that actually shows you that in the span of these 7 days, you had 8,700 people slaughtered, not killed, like executed. It's very shocking, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, seeing the memorial rooms and seeing the actual photos from what happened reminds you that we should be very grateful and that we should try really hard to keep the peace in the, well, at least what we've had in the West for the last 70 years.
Okay. Well, and you took us there to the border with Serbia, which is where that is, which is something like 40, 60 miles away from Sarajevo. I mean, again, not a big country.
Yes. If you're a tourist in Bosnia, you're going to feel perfectly fine with whomever you talk. We just hate each other between ourselves, but we love foreigners and we love to show you around. One thing that if you're in Sarajevo, what I would do if I was a tourist, like the best advice I can give you is talk to people. So many coffee shops. You just sit there. There's locals right next to you. We love to talk, but you have to address someone. And you shouldn't be shy. Just talk to someone. Most of the young people, they speak perfect English or, you know, pretty good English. And everyone will, you know, be happy just to talk a little bit with you, just to help you with whatever question you might have, they will answer. We're just very friendly people. And it doesn't matter if you're a Bosniak, Muslim, or Croat, Catholic, or Serbian, Orthodox, we're very friendly towards the travelers. And just feel free to talk to people. They're going to help you.
Excellent. And then we do need to move along. You hit us up then out of the cities into the countryside.
Yes. I've said day four, you should go to Travnik and Jajce. Now we're going into a little bit further history of Bosnia. So that's towns which started as medieval towns. King Jajce was one of the capitals of the medieval Bosnian kingdom, and also the city which we say where countries were born and died. So this is, for example, where Bosnian kingdom died when the last Bosnian king was killed by the Ottomans, as well where Yugoslavia was born, the second Yugoslavia, during the Second World War. It has this fantastic waterfall right in the center of the city. So Pliva River finishes. So the confluence of Pliva River into Vrbas is a big 30-meter waterfall. And right behind it, you see castle on top of the hill and the town surrounded by walls. And it's just fantastic little town to walk around. And actually, you feel like you've entered into history. Just outside of the town, there's two Pliva lakes. You can go there to, you know, just swim a little bit in these natural lakes, refresh yourself, and then continue to Prusac, which is a small little town between Jajce and Travnik. It's a site of the biggest Muslim gathering in Europe. So there is this legend that said that one grandpa prayed for 40 mornings for water, and the rock split open and the water came to town. So up till this day, it's the biggest Muslim gathering in Europe. And of course, from there, you go to Travnik, which is just a fantastic little town with the most beautiful mosque in Bosnia, if you ask me, the colorful mosque. And again, has nice fortress up on the hills, has very, very good food. And some would say Cevapcici, which are even better than Sarajevo ones. I did not say that. So after that, I would definitely recommend going up on the hills, doing hikes. I think the most interesting hike for someone who comes to Bosnia for the first time would be the Lukomir Highland Village. The hike is 8 kilometers one way. So you would start from Umoljani Village and go to Lukomir Village.
And I will try and find these and link these in the show notes, because yes, Bosnian words are a little more tricky to figure out how to spell. So don't worry about that. I've already done that by the time you listen to this. Just look at the show notes.
Of course, I will help you with that if you need any help. Now, hiking in Bosnia is not only about exercise. So both of the villages are medieval villages. There's absolutely amazing story about the time when Bossing King and his Grand Duke were struggling in the country, fighting for power, when people ran away to the mountains and started this village. And it's called Lukomir. It comes from two words, Lukamira, the harbor of peace. They ran away from these guys. And it's a fantastic place. It's the highest, most isolated village in the country. It's located right next to the second biggest canyon in Europe, second deepest canyon in Europe. And the trail actually takes you on the edge of this canyon up to the village. The trail starts from UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is this medieval Bosnian cemetery, these tombstones, which are unique for Bosnia and very beautiful, very characteristic. They're always situated in these amazing, amazing natural places. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of these legends surrounding these villages. You can see how people live even till this day, and you can even see how things are starting to change. So this traditional Highlander lifestyle is slowly changing now, being more into tourism, let's say, because this trail is right on Via Dinarica. So it is one ultra trail, a hiking trail, that goes all the way from Slovenia down to Albania, so covering the Dinaric Mountains. The central part of it is in Bosnia, and if you ask me, it's the best part of this ultra hiking trail. But we can talk about it a little bit later, maybe for the more adventurous types.
Okay.
So,
well, if we're right here, why don't we talk about it now?
All right. Via Dinarica is a fantastic project started a few years ago as a project that was financed by USAID, actually, cooperation between National Park Durmitor in Montenegro and National Park Sutjeska in Bosnia. And it proved to be a great idea, and they continue the idea based on old Yugoslavian transversal hikes. So it's like multi-day hikes that they did, but okay. It was never created in Yugoslavia like this Yugoslavian trail. So Via Dinarica was created, financed mostly by UNDP and USAID. So thank you guys for that. Thanks to US taxpayers. And today we have this fantastic, fantastic hike, which connects old smuggling routes, old shepherd trails, hiking trails and partisan trails from the Second World War, so the guys who fought the fascists here.
Sure.
And it connects all of these little trails to create this fantastic ultra trail, which is 1,300 kilometers.
Oh, wow.
One of them, and there's three of them. So obviously the white one, the middle one, is the most interesting because it goes to the highest mountains and it goes to the most interesting places. And it is a trail which has been selected by, for example, National Geographic as the best new ultra trail in the world. I think it was 2015 or 16. I'm not really sure about the year. Outdoor Magazine has marked it as one of the best new trails and many other things. The travelers, tourists, guests that we've had who walked on this trail, they've told me personally that this is absolutely fantastic, that it's better than Inca Trail, that the Bosnian mountains are better than Swiss Alps, that it resembles the lower Himalayas, that it resembles the New Zealand Alps. Now, I've even heard that it resembles the Rocky certain part, like Preň and Čvrsnica. So the things that I've just told you are world prime hiking destinations. And what we have here can compete with those. Bonus side is there's absolutely no one on the trail. So you get it to yourself, you get to enjoy the nature 100%, and just add to it these medieval villages and fantastic food. And it's just out of this world.
Now, you say there are three trails. You called one the white trail, one the green trail.
And the last one is the blue trail.
The blue trail.
So okay. The blue trail goes next to the sea, so that's why it's blue. It's mostly in Croatia and Montenegro. The white line goes through the middle, so on the highest mountains. And the green one goes further north where the mountains are lower, so it's mostly covered in forests.
Got it. Well, we should say that we have another separate episode about hiking in the Balkans, but that's a little further north from here. So there are other hiking opportunities in this area in general. So if you are a hiker, something to think about.
Definitely. And come before it becomes too popular, if you want it for yourself. Because honestly, this is world-class hiking, especially a part in Bosnia. If we're talking about Via Dinarica, part in Bosnia is especially interesting because you have so many changes on such small area. Like in Croatia, you get a lot of very dry mountains because of the closeness to the seaside and Mediterranean climate. In Montenegro, you get a lot of these rocky peaks, but only that. In Bosnia, literally, in one day, you can hike over four completely different mountains. So I'm just going to take one part around Rakitsa Canyon. You start on Preň. It's big rocky peaks. You can imagine it like Grand Tetons, just smaller.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So big rocky peaks all over. You just cross to Vysočica and you have these ridges. It's just very grassy, but you have these very, very narrow ridges. And mm-hmm. it's fantastic for if you want to have the views 360 degrees all around you. And then from Vysočica, you just cross to Bielašnica, which is very meadowy. It's just like you would imagine Scottish Highlands.
Okay. And let
me remind you, these three mountains are touching each other. The area we're talking about is 5-6 kilometers. And imagine, and this is just one tiny part of it. So the changes of scenery you get in Bosnia are outstanding.
Excellent. And where to next?
So after we've been hiking, we just go down the mountain to the little town of Konjic. Has fantastic Ottoman bridge there, nice little old town. But the reason we go there is whitewater rafting. It's not too extreme. Everyone can do it. Families can go there. If you want something more extreme, you have to go to northwestern Bosnia, where you get class 5 rapids on Una River in the Una National Park.
Okay.
But on Neretva River, you go through two fantastic canyons, rafting all the way down to the town of Konjic. And honestly, it's very, very fun activity. You get class 3 rapids. You get a lot of places to jump in the water. You get to the confluence of Rakitsa River. So you have like four canyons connecting right there on that spot. So it's a very, very beautiful area. After that, I would suggest going further down south to Mostar. Obviously, Sarajevo and Mostar are two most popular tourist destinations in Bosnia.
Right.
For a good reason. For a good reason. Now, for example, what we do in our company is something that just like we would do it. So when we were younger, to be honest, even now, if we want to go on a day trip somewhere, we take the car, we go drive down to Mostar, have breakfast in Mostar, continue to Kravice waterfall, swim there, come back, stop in Počtelj for coffee, go to Blagaj, eat fresh trout there, go to Mostar for dinner or to go out a little bit and then come back to Sarajevo. We do it in a day. And this is exactly how we do it with tourists. You know, we give them what we do. We give them something that's very personal to us, something we've been doing for years. We give it to tourists. And it is fantastic, honestly.
Well, and just to put some scale on that, the drive from Sarajevo to Mostar is a little over 2 hours.
It is exactly 2 hours.
Okay. But I think you drive a little faster than me. But
yes, we are known as a little bit, I would say, more crazy drivers than European standard.
Well, and I think the town you were mentioning, which has a beautiful old bridge, is about halfway through and a great tea stop.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, right after 1 hour, that's
yep.
Konjic, right in the middle.
Because I think we took a tour to, basically, we flew into Sarajevo. I didn't mention this, but we mm-hmm. kind of went to Bosnia accidentally. We were planning on going to Croatia, as so many people did. And we could not get flights into Dubrovnik using points, using our miles from our travel credit cards. And mm-hmm. so we said, well, where around here can we fly into using points? And there was plenty of availability to Sarajevo. And we went, well, why don't we fly there? I wonder if there's anything interesting to see in Sarajevo. And it did turn out, I mean, we love Dubrovnik, don't get me wrong, but mm-hmm. it turned out to be one of the highlights of the whole trip. Was that accidental stop in Sarajevo. And then we transferred basically from Sarajevo to Mostar by van, stopping at the beautiful bridge, stopping in Mostar for lunch, and driving through some of, you mentioned the UNESCO World Heritage Sites, which are the medieval mm-hmm. gravestones and such that are several different places around the country, and drove through some of those on the way to Dubrovnik. And that was just a beautiful day trip from Sarajevo all the way to Dubrovnik. And so mm-hmm. if you were going to be there, repeating intentionally our accidental itinerary is something I would recommend.
So if you go to Mostar, it's quite a small town, and
right.
getting around on foot is very easy. It looks like a fairy tale. I don't know. It's honestly one of the most beautiful towns I've seen in my life, and I've been there like 1,000 times.
And if you've seen a picture of Bosnia, it's probably a picture of Mostar.
Exactly. It's going to be that picture, two towers with a bridge between. That's
yep.
it. Now, there are a lot of beautiful bridges all around the world, but this bridge is absolutely unique. There's no other bridge like that. No other bridge like that. let alone the history. I'm just talking about the architecture, the beauty of it. And if you ask anyone in Boston, we're going to say that's the most beautiful bridge on the planet. Just seeing that is worth coming in Boston, Bosnia. Some people might not agree that it's the most beautiful bridge on the planet, but it's definitely one of the most beautiful bridges on the planet.
I think definitely it's worth being that. In the conversation. Yeah.
Yes. But the history, when you get the history and the story of the bridge, that's, it has no competition there. I'll just say that.
Well, and this is not an undiscovered city. We should just say.
No, it is not. It is not.
So, this gets a lot of tourism, more than Sarajevo, yes. I think, or at least more concentrated than Sarajevo.
More concentrated. More concentrated.
Because a lot of people day trip here from Dubrovnik, for instance.
Exactly. So from Croatian coast, a lot of Croatian coast obviously gets a lot of people going to the seaside all during the summer. And a lot of them, if they stay for a week or 2 weeks on the seaside, they want to do day trips. So they come to Mostar. Yep. And yes, if we're going to talk about tourism policies in Bosnia, Mostar is doing it wrong. No one stays there. No one spends money there. They just come see, eat ice cream, go back. So that's something we have to work on. And that's why avoid Mostar during the summer. If you're going to come and you want to enjoy Mostar, come early spring or come, not late summer, come during the fall. So when there are no crowds. Okay. Mostar is fantastic, but during summer, especially during the day, it can be overwhelming. Just walking through the narrow streets of Old Town can be a challenge.
Well, I would guess if you did go to Bosnia in the summer and you wanted to go to Mostar, that the trick is probably to stay there because most people don't and see it in the evening or the morning.
Yes, definitely. That's it.
Excellent.
Early morning, yes. There's a couple of cafes all around the old bridge area.
Oh, yeah.
Where you get the view on the bridge.
So oh, yeah.
You
sit that's there, where we you ate our lunch. Exactly.
Get your coffee and just watch the bridge, and this is perfection.
Excellent. Where to next? I think we're wrapping up here.
From Mostar, there's quite a short drive. From Mostar is Blagaj. So as I said earlier, this is an ensemble which is both religious and historical and cultural and natural. And the whole area is protected in those four segments. So it's protected as a very important site for Muslims. It's protected as historical heritage, national heritage. It's protected as a geomorphological structure. This huge cliff that creates this little amphitheater all around this complex is protected as such. And the biggest water source in Europe. Yes, so literally imagine one cave and river just flows out.
Okay.
So it's a very spectacular sight when you see it like that. So it's protected as a hydrological structure as well. Yes, so Sarajevo Teke was older, but it was destroyed back in the 70s. So it is now the oldest Teke in Bosnia. So people might wonder, wait, what is Teke? So
yes,
it's,
thank you. mm-hmm.
So Muslims don't really have monasteries, and we try to explain this as a monastery or something. But a lot of people have heard of whirling dervishes.
Sure.
The guys in Turkey who have their white dresses and they spin in circles. They are just one of the brotherhoods that stay in Tekkes like this. So the whirling dervishes are actually Mevlevis. So this is one of the, let's call them brotherhoods. And for them, the way to get closer to God is through this dance. However, Teke in Blagaj is not their Teke. So in Bosnia, actually, 80% of these Tekes, of Sufis, 80% of them are Naqshbendi. So it's a little bit different.
Okay.
It is still active Teke. They still hold their zikr, their, can't call it prayer, but their gatherings there. However, it is open for tourists as well.
Okay.
So after Blagaj, we drive down half an hour further south to this town of Pocitelj, which I told you already is this old, old village with a built in a natural amphitheater overlooking Neretva River. It has one of the most beautiful mosques in Bosnia. If you ask me, the most beautiful classic Istanbul-style mosque in Bosnia in the center. And all around it, you have these beautiful, beautiful traditional houses, which actually show you just how many layers you have in Bosnia. So you have traditional Bosnian houses mixed with Oriental influences, Ottoman architecture, mixed with Dalmatian, or actually Venetian influences, so from the Venetian Republic times. And it just creates this very, very beautiful ensemble. You can just walk around, jump on the walls surrounding the town, climb on the tower, climb on the fortress, and just walk around. That's one thing that's very interesting in Boston. A lot of places all around the country. And I think this is what your guest said in the first episode you did about Bosnia, is that you can just go in and walk over the castles, walk over the forts and so on. And I really love that because you feel like you are entering history there. Not a lot of places are regulated. And if you're in a country where you have 330 castles or all around the country where you can just go inside and explore or even set up a camp and sleep there, put up a tent and just sleep inside, it's just fantastic. So, for example, in Blagaj, on this cliff that I mentioned in Blagaj, right on top of the cliff, you have Stjepangrad. It's a castle which was a seat of the Grand Duke of Bosnia, Herceg Stjepan Kostić, the guy who actually named Herzegovina. And what we sometimes do, there is one Via Ferrata going all around this cliff. You go hiking, this extreme version of hiking.
So Via Ferrata, so an iron road, so this is a hiking trail with steel ladders pounded into the cliff.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes.
And you do that, and then you finish at the castle. And then we just take the tents, we put them inside of the castle, sleep there, and in the morning you watch the sunset. The sunrise. In the evening you watch the sunset. And it's just fantastic. No one touches you, no one does anything, and you have the view on the valley, on Neretva in the distance. I don't know any other place where you can set up a tent inside of a historical fort. Inside of a national monument.
I don't think I do either.
Yes. So I would just advise people to go to Bosnia and explore it. Just ask the locals what's fun to do, what do they do, where they would recommend to go, and just do it or join them. A lot of them will be happy to take you somewhere. We're that friendly.
Excellent. I think that wraps up your itinerary. Am I correct?
Yes, pretty much. We can skip Kravice if they're too overcrowded, maybe. It's still a beautiful place to go. It's still a beautiful river to swim in. But it is honestly a little bit overcrowded nowadays.
That is too bad.
Yes, so there are other spots where you can go and have that experience, like Štrbački Buk in northwestern Bosnia, even bigger waterfall and amazing rafting over there.
Excellent. As we get to some of our wrap-up questions, you're standing at the prettiest spot in Bosnia. Where are you standing?
Oh, my gosh.
And what are you looking at?
Oh, my God. Oh, I have so many. The first one that comes to mind is actually on the border between Bosnia and Montenegro, so we're going to look in Montenegro a little bit as well.
Okay. And when we were down at the last, where you ended us on this itinerary, we're not far from Dubrovnik and therefore also not far from Montenegro, maybe 30 miles away or something like that.
Yes. So when you asked me that question, the first thing that came to mind is I'm standing on the peak, on the second highest mountain in Bosnia, overlooking huge heart-shaped lake 500 meters below. And on the other side of the lake is Maglič, the highest mountain in Bosnia. But I'm a very passionate hiker, mountain guide, and this is the first image that comes to me. It's a very hard hike getting up there.
And what is the name of the peak that we're on?
It actually can be few of them. It can be few of them, but if you want to do this, you would climb to Volujak Mountain, and there are three or four peaks which have the view that I just told you about. But okay. Volujak Mountain, it's Sutjeska National Park. That's how people will remember it.
Excellent.
It's in Sutjeska National Park. The thing that we just talked about, the most beautiful view and so on.
Yep.
I've actually mentioned two more things during our interview. So first one is definitely from the Yellow Bastion in Sarajevo during sunset. Sitting there, having that Bosnian-style pizza and just looking at the city. And the second one is from the castle on top of the cliff in Blagaj.
Okay. And one question I forgot to ask when you had us at the Yellow Bastion above Sarajevo is, we have Bosnian pizza. You said it has Bosnian ingredients. I don't know what a Bosnian ingredient is on pizza.
We eat a lot of dried meat.
Okay.
So this pizza has a lot of dried meat. Kaimak. Do you know what's kaimak?
I do not know what kaimak is.
So it's a thing which you also eat with cevapi. It's kind of a cheese, but not really cheese. One guest that I had explained it that kaimak is something between yogurt and cheese and tastes like heaven. This is perfect example. This is perfect explanation. I will leave it there.
Excellent. Excellent. So,
pizza with dried meat and kaimak.
And then if you had to summarize Bosnia in just three words, what three words would you use?
Can I use Bosnian words?
Yes, but then you'll need to translate.
Chief Merak Rahatluk.
Okay.
Yes, so best way to explain it is like, it's like a state of zen. When you're when you're perfectly relaxed, happy in the moment where you are. So after a long day of working, you sit in the old town or you sit on the yellow bastion and you have your cup of Bosnian coffee and you don't care about anything else in the world. That's chief. It's something that's very important for Bosnians. I can give you later a story in Sarajevo. Actually, I'm going to do it now so we can cut it out. In the 17th century, there's one German traveler who came to Sarajevo. And he said that in Sarajevo, you can do literally anything except destroy the chief of Sarajevan people. So he explained that when you're walking on the streets, there's a lot of people, you know, selling stuff, selling you those little metal trinkets that you talked about. Mm-hmm. Just selling stuff on the streets, and there's a lot of people, you know, shouting and talking and so on. But when you enter a coffee shop, it's perfect silence. This is where Sarajevans go to have their chief. And they're sitting there smoking their tobacco or smoking hookahs, water pipes. And if you come there, sit there, you're perfectly welcome. But if you, for example, hit a hookah with your foot, then you can get in trouble because you're destroying the chief of Sarajevan person. So chief, very important. Second thing I mentioned is merak. Merak is similar to chief, but it's more active.
Okay.
Merak is something that you do, something that you're more involved in, even physically, I would say. And merak can be rafting. Merak can be, you know, you're standing on a peak and you're very happy with what you did, or you see this canyon in front of you, and that can be merak. Merak can be also singing with your friends. Said we're very, very friendly people. The last thing is rahatluk, probably the most important one. Rahat means worry-free, and rahatluk would be when you're in the state of mind, both physically and emotionally, where you are content with where you are and how you are. You don't have to have a lot, but you're happy with what you have, and that's rahatluk. Bosnia is nowhere near perfect, but for us, it's absolute perfection. We cannot live, for a lot of Bosnians, we cannot live anywhere else. Even if we live in the States, even if we live in the Germany and so on, dream of most of the Bosnian people is to come back, to come back to Bosnia. People are not leaving because they don't like this country. People are leaving because they can't find jobs. And every Bosnian person, the best place to live is right here. And that's rahatluk. This is where our rahatluk is. This is where our heart is.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Kenan Čatović. The Bosnian words, I trip over them just a little bit, from Highlander.ba. And Kenan, if we wanted to send people to the best resource on Highlander Adventures for them to plan their trip to Bosnia, where should we send them?
Well, you can go to the website, you can see what we offer, and then just contact us. You tell us what you want to do, and we're going to make it happen.
Well, and we should be clear, in case I wasn't, that Kenan does run tours in Bosnia. I think that came across, but just in case it didn't, you don't have to book with him, but certainly now that you've fallen in love with him, you're certainly welcome to do so.
Thank you very much. I've been a tourist guide for, what year is it, 2020? For 13 years. I've been mountain guide for last 8 years. And my specialty is adventure trips. My partner in the company, he actually has a PhD in war studies. So if you want to learn more about Bosnia, you will go with him. He is someone who had lectures on Columbia University in New York, for example, not once. So imagine you have a PhD, someone who's been working on a lot on the topics of war and mass graves and concentration camps here in Bosnia. If you want to learn something, he's the guy for you.
Excellent. Well, Kenan, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for your country of Bosnia.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to answer at least a few questions. Thank you very much for your interest in Bosnia. Thank you very much for showing people that they have nothing to be afraid of here.
Oh, good
grief.
Bosnia
is wonderful, very welcoming country of very friendly people, where if you come, you are going to fall in love with it. I promise you.
In news of the community, I heard from patron of the show, Steve, who said, I really enjoyed the podcast, and this is the podcast on Lebanon. She touched on all the places I visited except one. She didn't mention the Gita Grotto. I've been to Carlsbad and Karchner Caverns in the American Southwest, and I must say this one ranks right up there with the best. It's large, beautifully lit, has a nice elevated concrete walkway and a huge diversity of stalagmites and stalactites. There is also a lower portion that includes a riverboat ride, but it had been rainy and the river was running too high, so it was temporarily closed. For your listeners that enjoy caves, I would highly recommend it. Really enjoy your show. Keep up the good work. And thanks so much, Steve. I also heard from Mercedes. My name is Mercedes, and my husband Benjamin and I love listening to your podcast. We've been listening to it for 3 or so months and listen to it daily. We are travelers ourselves and try to travel at least 4 places yearly. We've been to over 11 countries and 15 states together within the last 3 out of 6 years of being together. Being in our early 20s, a lot of people call us crazy for prioritizing travel. Hopefully one day we can chat with you and maybe be an episode about our travels and pick your brain for our future planned trips. Thank you for your time and look forward to listening to more episodes. Mercedes and Benjamin. Well, and fortunately for you, you've just tuned in here in the last 3 months, and we've been doing this now for coming up on 15 years, 15 years, July 2nd. So it's going to be a little while before you catch up. Assuming you're listening to one episode a day, I have a little time. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral.